fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing well. I had a weird week. I kind of got sick this week, and then I had a a mysterious illness, and then I had a a medication mix up. It's a story for another time.
Fuck you, unlabeled oxy.
Anyway, that didn't go well. I'm fine. I'm recovered. I'm well. I went out last night to a comedy show, and so I'm a little tired.
Yeah, last time we did that, we got weird.
I did not get weird. I was able even to drive home safely. So I had two drinks.
Fire truck.
with that said, you're like a child.
No, you're like a grown up, responsible human adult.
No, you like randomly pointing out the fire truck.
Yeah, fire truck just drove through our street. There's like nothing comes down our street but the mail truck.
It's a fire truck.
Fuck you.
Oh, the airplane.
We're in a
daddy choo choo.
We're in the landing path of the airport. We don't hear the airplanes, but because of the view we have to the west, we can see airplanes coming and going. It is unusual for anything other than anyone who lives to be on our street.
That's true. That's true. I did see Patton Oswalt last night, which was fun. He was really good. Entertaining and professional, and I was really impressed by his show. It was a small venue. It was good.
That venue is kind of flummoxing, because it used to be just a dirty venue that was like half country club, half hip hop bar, and then when everyone would leave it, then they would fight in the parking lot. It is affectionately known as the Hodeo, because it used to be Rock and Rodeo, and is totally cleaned up and is now like a great comedy venue.
Yeah, like a good, yeah.
In fact,
I wouldn't call it like a world-class comedy venue, but it
is no better or worse else than the Comedy Cellar in Vegas, which is a world-renowned, maker of comedians.
Yeah.
Right. Having been to both and enjoyed shows in both, I have no preference.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's a good venue. They do kind of squeeze you in. You are packed in pretty tight, but comedy I don't think club. That's uncommon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's comedy club.
Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired also. I've had some like back to back, big activity weekends. So this last weekend or yesterday, we went up to the Portland Zoo, and we're driving up, and it's usually a two and a half hour drive. We're making great time. And then this connector highway that exists in Portland for about 12 miles, Highway 217, it's just closed. There's no anything about it. It's just closed. So then we have to drive through like...
All of 217 is closed?
All of 217 northbound closed. Basically from the I-5 exit.
Cool.
Because they're repaving it, every time we get on 217, I bitch because 217 has been under construction my entire life. I never remember driving on that highway without traffic cones somewhere, or like construction vehicles adjacent to the roadway. Never once. So anyway, it took us like 3 hours and some change to get there. The zoo was great. The Portland Zoo has been doing a lot of upgrading over the last decade. They've got this world-class elephant habitat. That was really cool. There's a baby elephant, which is like watching any other baby, but several hundred pounds, just doing baby shit. It was fun, but it makes for a really long day to drive all the way up to... you spend 5 hours in the car and another 5 hours doing whatever. It just makes for a long day. So I'm a little tired. Happy today is nap day. And protected nap day. Like I get to take a nap and it's not like, oh, dad's napping. It's like, dad's napping. Be quiet. Which is fantastic. Good. doing
cool.
good.
Cool, 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 cool.
The point of today's meeting is not to talk about comedy clubs or zoos or highway construction, but rather to talk about watches. And Andrew, I understood that you had come prepared with some watches to discuss. Is that fair to say?
You know, you typically say that when you have nothing and you're putting the onus on me to come up with something.
I spent zero time preparing for this episode.
As per usual. First watch I want to talk about, and we talked briefly about it before the show, is the I'm going to say Namica, N-A-M-I-C-A, Shirahama.
It's either Namica or Namica.
I like Namica. I like the emphasis on that I. It's a little more fun to say. I didn't do a whole lot of digging into this brand. I will say, when you get to the bottom of this Time and Tide article, there is a disclaimer that says it's made in partnership with Namica, but the opinions expressed in the article are our own and in accordance with our editorial policy. And if you go to the Namica website, there's a Time and Tide logo at the bottom. So I'm going to do a little bit more looking into that relationship. Like, I don't know if it's a Time and Tide brand or if it's just a partnership with a fledgling brand. But this is... This watch has very clear kind of growing pain flaws, but by and large is pretty good. This is a 40 millimeter by 11.7 thick with a 47 lug to lug dive watch. It's a 200 meter screw down crown, sapphire crystal, 20 meter lug width, Miyota 9039 movement, coming in at under $1,000. So US money, it is it peaks at $675 based on your colorway decision. Or if you get in this early bird pricing on a bracelet, $600, pre-order $629, and $675 is what you're going to see these at retail. Five colorways: Cherry Blossom Candy, Cherry Blossom Kanji, Neo Blizzard, Neo Tokyo Evo, and Ultra Blue. What got me excited about these is these are kind of like the modernized version of the 2016 micro brand dive watch craze with interesting influences that you can see in modern brands. This watch because of the way they've done the bezel inserts, it kind of has like a sapphire bezel insert feel, very like Ferrer inspired. Some of the dial design choices kind of like, oh, that's sort of Christopher Wardy. Like this is one of the first watches that as I look at it, I'm like, I'm pulling on modern small brands as the inspirations for the colorways are bombastic and fun, but they work in the way that like Studio Underdog does colors that work or Ferrer does the colors that work. The markers are very simple. This is fun. And it looks good. It's spec'd well. The case is a touch boring. It's a little bit slabby on the side. I'm not super jacked on the lugs, but it's not like I'm disappointed by them. I'm just like, oh, they feel a little bit like an afterthought. But barring that, like for under $1,000 for a well-spec'd fun dive watch, I'm into it. And this blue... The ultra blue with this kind of powdery blue dial and orange secondhand, orange accents on the dial, a blue 9-3 with a white 3-9 on the bezel. I'm jacked. Like, these are good.
Yeah, no, I agree. So this is not the first version of the Shirahama. I think
these are the two.
So when they first came out with this watch, I believe it was with an NH35, a Seiko movement. They've upgraded these to a Miyota movement, which I think is just a terrific decision. I'm sure that makes the watch more expensive. But I think these are great. For my part, Andrew, I've not heard any relationship with Time and Tide. I wonder if it's simply the post that's a sponsored post. I don't think.
But if you click on the Namika, if that link at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
in partnership with Namika. So it's made in partnership with Namika. I don't know if this is like a brand collaboration. And if you look at that's the Namika website. It bears the Time and Tide logo. I'm wondering.
I think
if
that's just a quote from the review.
Maybe.
I think so. So, you know, if you know something we don't know, feel free to let us know.
It's something that I want to dig into because it's something that I'm not. It's unclear.
I do want to say the clasp on these looks terrific. I don't know. You said something that I'm going to agree with, Andrew. You said this is sort of like the 2025 version of, I'm paraphrasing, the 2015 microbrand mm-hmm. diver. And I think that's such a great way to put it because, yeah, this is like they're not breaking any molds, but they do seem to have really lined out everything. You know, we've got a great clasp. We don't have the same clasp that was issued on every single dive watch for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is just their clasp or if this is somebody else's. Everything just looks like it's dialed in. Some of the style decisions I don't love. I don't love the real heavy texture on their knurling.
I do really like that.
Yeah, it seems a little bit. It seems a little bit like 98 Hot Topic studded belt, but.
I saw somebody wearing sunglasses with the spike studs through the lenses, and I was like, how do you fucking see things?
But that's the only, I mean, it's a pretty cool watch. And like
pink,
you said,
the pink dial with kanji, the pink is fantastic. Yeah. It's like cotton candy.
Great colors.
Like white wispy. Yeah. The blue, though, is where it's at.
I have a hard time criticizing anything. The price is right. It looks terrific. If you like these, this looks great. It's obviously a brand that's going to deliver. I think this is a really cool watch.
And it's cool to see Japanese brand slay in. And not
I
like
can't tell if they're a Japanese brand or if they're just celebrating Japanese culture, but I don't think it really matters.
It's a Japanese brand.
Okay.
Or at least, you know, presumptively. But not doing like Seiko reissues. And that's what excited me about this watch. I was like, oh, this is a watch inspired by modern watches and not the watches of yore.
But with plenty of design language that harkens back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. I'm with you, Andrew.
Kind of Halios feeling. Yeah, you get a ton of feels of brands that are like,
I get a lot of Seiko in there. I get a lot of Seiko.
Because everyone's inspired by Seiko.
Yeah, I get a lot of Seiko.
Anyhow.
Citizen?
Which?
Citizen is a company also out of Japan, Andrew. Citizen released a sort of like a nothing burger watch this week, or at least sort of seemed like a nothing burger watch. Which is a new colorway of their Tsuyosa 37mm. They're calling this the time slip, and they're describing the dial as smoked black with gold accents. I want to say that it was either earlier this year or late 2024 that they released the Tsuyosa in a 37mm, and as Japanese companies are wont to do, they released those 37mm sort of with design language that was clearly intended to wrangle feminine wearers.
Mm-hmm.
You and I commented at the time that 37mm just seemed like a terrific size for this watch.
The perfect size for this design.
And, you know, regardless of your gender identity, 37 millimeters is really classic proportions for this watch. And given the case, I think it's, you know, given that sort of blocky case that the Suiosa has, I think it's going to wear really great.
Look, I'm wearing my C63 right now, and it doesn't feel, and the C63 wears great,
mm-hmm.
but it wears, and it wears small. The 36 commuter doesn't feel much smaller than this watch.
Yeah, that's right. That's fair. Yeah.
Because it's blocky. It's big. And that 36, right. You need it to be, for that K-shape, you need it to be 36. And I think the 37 Suiosa is the same way. At 40, it's going to be huge. And at 37, it's going to be perfect.
And for me, my only sort of, the only umbrage I took with the release, that 37 millimeter release, was with their dials. I thought the dials were boring. They had a black dial, which I'm like, great, black dial, fine. But then they had like a blue and a pink and a green that we were both like, okay,
yeah.
The green's really nice, but it just was like, okay, you got a black, so you're good by me.
You at least have something.
You're always going to be good by me with a black dial. But then the rest of them just kind of felt like, man. So they have, I think, here, remedied that wrong.
No.
This is, I think, absolutely fantastic addition. It's got like a black ombre dial that fades to a neutral gray in the middle. It would have been really easy to make this fade to like khaki or brown. And I'm so glad they didn't. So we've got gold accents.
It's because gilted. That's why they kept it charcoal-y all the way through.
And this really neutral, cool gray that fades from light gray to black at the outside.
So they're calling it the smoked black. Mm-hmm. It really does look like a time lapse of like a charcoal briquette,
yeah,
burning to white. It's not fully white, but it has that deep dark kind of glossy black that
it evokes white because of the contrast with the outside. Mm-hmm. It's still a really heavily saturated gray,
yeah,
but because of the contrast. Anyway, this is, it's a stunning watch.
Yeah, I love the Suiosa.
It's a stunning dial on a really good watch. They nailed the colors here. I do think the 37 millimeter versions of this watch, I think that they have not scaled down the font sizes, in particular the automatic text. Mm. I think it's too big. I think it would be well served by reducing that text by, you know, 30% maybe. But that's a really minor addition. Great gold weight on the movement here. Still 8,000 series movements, which are fine, but the price on these things, $495 US, it's really pretty easy.
Yeah, you can overlook a lot of errors.
That's
right. And we're not looking at errors here. We're looking at like, I'd like to improve this. Like, yeah, it's because, you know, I want a $5,000 watch.
And the Suiosa, famously one of these watches that packs most of its height, so 11.5 millimeters, but it packs most of its height in the case back.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this watch down to a very thin, again, if you have that average adult male wrist, this watch wears incredibly thin. I'm confident.
Yeah. The midline, if you're looking at the side profile of the case, the midline is north of the center of the crown.
Yeah. I mean, it's looking like a 9 millimeter watch perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a terrific, finally a good dial on an otherwise terrific release.
Look at how much that Cyclops, yeah, bulges, yeah, above the flat crystal.
Yeah, some people don't like those Cyclops. I'm fine with it. I think it's a fun addition. I take this watch over the PRX.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every single day. Yeah. Even the PVD Gold PRX.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even and you know, that's a much better movement on the PRX, on the automatic PRX.
Mm-hmm.
And so say what you will.
This is more fun. This has like more 70s feel.
I'm with you.
Yeah, this is more fun. And as much as I do like that PVD PRX, this is a cooler watch.
I think so.
Yeah. And there's only 8,000 of them being made. And for the price, this is, you know, $500.
Yeah.
The bracelet looks good. Citizen does good, affordable bracelets. Unlike Seiko, they don't like abandon their bracelets at the sub-$1,000 mark.
Yeah. No, Citizen, much better bracelets than Seiko at this price range, for sure.
Since we're talking about Seiko, or excuse me, Citizen, they have a new generation of the ProMaster Skyhawk coming in three colorways. And this is big. This is Skyhawk, right? It is a 43 millimeter case. It's 13.9 thick. 200 meters of water resistance. I mean, it's a big bitch. This is intentionally a big, gaudy instrument watch that isn't worn for the instrument application. What is cool about this watch? They have three case colorways, one being uncoated steel, two being a black PVD, and then one they're calling an iron coated, which is similar to PVD, and it kind of evokes like a titanium look to it. And it's on this blue dial, so it looks like it's titanium blue or titanium case with this really good kind of sunbursty dark blue. The triple sub-dial from the 3 to 9 with your Anadigi digital display at the 6 o'clock. I like want to hate this watch, and I can't. This has like affordable Navitimer feel about it. It's like simultaneous with douchebag who went to the Macy's counter feel about it. I'm really conflicted, and I really like it. And I think that's why I'm conflicted, because I dig this. This Skymaster, Skyhawk, Citizen line just has my number.
Yeah, so these come on the tails of the new ProMaster Land remake makeover that came out this year with the new U800 movements, which it's a memory and pixel display. So they're obviously planning to roll this out to across their catalog for their high end Anadigi selections. This watch is nuts, right? It's nuts. I mean the technical upgrades here go beyond just the aesthetic, but that aesthetic upgrade is incredible, right? Yes. So you know, the Skyhawk used to be kind of like asymmetrical here. I think we've got a more sort of like, amazingly, I'm gonna say, a more subdued layout, which is hard to reckon with considering how busy it is.
Three subdials, 4 minute tracks, and a digital display.
I know.
But it's the Citizen.
And a slide rule. I mean, this is, thing is fucking nuts. With that said, I'm going to say more subdued than the prior versions.
I kind of hate how much I love it.
Yeah, it's really pretty cool. Obviously not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
This is my cup of tea.
I think so.
They're under $1,000. I said to the guys the other day, like, it's under 100 or over 1,000 for a watch that is going to survive in my line of work.
I mean, we're just comparing it to the last version of the Skyhawk AT, and
it's adding that Anadigi that makes the legibility, and I think maybe making it more busy with the digital display is what makes it a more legible and better to deal with watch.
Yeah,
because they kind of have that Arnie layout, right? So your southern hemisphere is your digital display, your northern hemisphere has three subdials. But you can actually read it, right? And that's, I think, the one of the problems that Citizen has with their super complex 19 complication watches is they stuff them all onto the dial in a way that when you learn to read your instrument cluster,
yeah,
it's easy. but you have to learn to read your instrument cluster.
Yeah.
In this layout, everything is pretty quick reference, glance and go. Unlike previous iterations that are, you have to find your instrument, read it and move. I wear a Nighthawk often, and it's far less complicated watch, and you still have to very intentionally look at it to find the information you want.
Yeah.
This is not that. This has like Arnie feel, like Navitimer with added complications feel.
I think the biggest difference is instead of getting the segmented LCD, dedicated LCD displays, you're getting this one memory and pixel display that can be customized to your needs, and memory and pixel is known for drawing quite a bit less power too. So,
so good.
Yeah, that's right. So it can be as simple as just a calendar or a time display, or you can have it focused on a relatively complicated display. So it's a really cool watch. Again, not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
And $1,000.
Yeah, it's an expensive, big old fucking weird.
It's $850 for the black, $795 for the blue and gray. And the black is okay. The black is closer to like streetwear,
yeah,
fashion. The gray, that like iron coated, is where it's at. $795.
Yeah,
And on a Citizen bracelet that you know they don't overlook.
We were just complimenting Citizen on their bracelets. I will say the clasp on this thing looks like a turd, but
it's the bracelet, it's a Citizen looks good. Clasp.
Yeah.
Just a flip lock Citizen.
Staying in the family, Bulova introduced their 150th anniversary. It's crazy. Bulova, celebrating its 150th anniversary, has released a Timascus dialed lunar pilot, which, if you don't know what Timascus is, it is a titanium Damascus. It's a Damascus styled titanium. I'm always sort of curious about what titanium Damascus, what Damascus is actually comprised of. Is it just like different grades of titanium, or do they put other alloys in there? Anyway,
I mean, they have to do something because they're
the portmanteau is easy enough because it's clearly evocative. There's titanium here. You can see blue and sort of like a dark wheat color alternating. It's a gorgeous dial.
It really is.
It's a gorgeous dial. But this is a lunar pilot, man. It's a 44 millimeter,
65 lug to lug,
big old lunar pilot with a 262 hertz movement. These are limited to 5,500. They did these in collaboration with a...
Are there relief cuts on the side of the case?
I don't think so, Andrew. They did this in collaboration with a Portuguese artist named, I think it's Tiago Rosanole, who has an astronaut character that's called Buddy, which is like this sort of vaguely Mickey Mouse looking astronaut thing. Yeah, it's interesting, Andrew. I don't know.
There's like a relief cut on the knot.
He appears on the back. If you know what that is, cool. I don't really know. I don't know anything about the artist or the character. but he's worked with Bulova on these from the front of the watch. There's no indication that that's happening. Andrew is noticing something that looks like relief cuts in the side of the watch.
On the knot crown side.
Yeah, I don't know, Andrew. It's not something I've ever seen.
Which before. Is not a lunar pilot case. Feature and there's only only two profile like not even full profile from the knot crown side, and the lunar pilot is just like a super long, super flat watch. The pushers on it have this PVD blue that's color matched to the bezel, kind of the font on the on the bezel isn't photinaed at all. They kind of blended all the colors.
It's got that sort
that
of
that are on the dial wheat. That yep. like almost create like a peachy mother of pearl multicolored feel that perfectly matches the dial. These are good. I've always really liked the Lunar Pilot. It just doesn't fit me right.
It's a big watch. If you've not tried one of these on,
don't buy it without trying it on. Yeah. This is one of the few watches that I'm comfortable saying, if you buy it without ever having tried it on, there's a coin toss chance you'll be really disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, this is beautiful. It's a beautiful watch. I'm a fan of it. I've never done a Lunar Pilot just because it's never quite worked out for me. I really wish you could get the titanium and gold version with a bracelet, but you can't. I'd probably own that watch.
I've come really close to pulling the trigger. It's lug to lug. It's just too long. It like hangs over my wrist.
What's next, bud?
Ooh, Anoma is a brand that I'm not sure we've ever talked about. Anoma has come out with the A1 optical. And it is weird on weird on weird. It evokes like all of the weird modern design elements. Like imagine the Crash. Imagine it has Cartier feels. It has the what's the Hamilton watch they wore in Men in Black? The triangle that they wore in Men in Black.
Yeah, the Elvis watch.
The Elvis watch. Which I suppose is maybe more fitting than Men in Black, but you know, that shares my age. So this is a triangular cased watch with the dial being just rotated like
slightly
20 degrees, perhaps
like a spirograph,
like kind of like a spirograph,
second pass on the spirograph,
like 20 degrees more in a clockwise direction, and then a spiraling concentric circle dial. It's hands only, no markers, really high polish on the case, and then the spiral pattern in the dial is triangular, so there's three distinct sections that you're getting the spiraling feel. It's kind of like looking into a mirror and a mirror and a mirror and a mirror, where you're just like getting sucked into this dial. It comes in a copper color or a silver color, a Sellita SW100 movement, 39 millimeter case with a 38 millimeter lug width. So it's going to wear big. This is like, because of this triangle, this is going to be a fairly large watch. 945 tall, 50 meters of water resistance. This is like for $2,200 or £2,200. So $2,300, maybe $2,400. Starts to have that feeling of high fashion, jewelry-esque watches. And I really dig it. Hooded leather strap on these things. I'm kind of in love. You might not be, but I like, no, this is a really confusing watch to me that I just really want.
You know, I don't know if we talked about, I want to say they unveiled this A1 last year, about this time last year.
And we didn't talk about it because now it's finally coming to market.
Well, no, I think they released a different version of this last year. It had markings on the dial, and And I remember at least talking with you about it, whether or not we talked on this show or not.
Oh, I do remember this one as I'm looking at the link. And we didn't talk about this. This was one that got pushed to the bottom of the list and didn't make it.
And it felt a little, it felt like, I don't know. It just felt like a little like confused. I feel like this version, although audaciously, it's probably less practical as a watch because I think trying to tell the time on this.
This is how late people
is going to be really hard.
Excuse their lateness. Right. versus, I believe it is a quarter after three.
Versus the one that came out last year, I think probably significantly easier to tell the time on.
It's like wearing a single-handed watch. I'm about.
I think this is a lot more fun, and certainly I think if you know kind of like approximately what hour it is, then you're going to be fine. But there's something about that, like. There's something about that laissez-faire attitude towards the time that this watch mandates that I think is pretty neat.
This is the watch that a mediator should be wearing. Like, I have morning, late morning, afternoon, evening. Like, I don't give a shit what time it is. I'm billing no matter what. Like, y'all argue.
Yeah, it is really a good looking watch. I like the silver dial a lot more than I like the copper dial.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the copper. The copper is like tends toward like salmon flavor, yeah. And I maybe have found a salmon dial that I was down with, but generally speaking, that's not a color that really does it for me.
Yeah. Andrew, last year Timex re-released the Intrepid, which was this. JFK Jr. watch. This watch that was sort of like, you know, kind of had a similar vibe as my beloved AMW 320 watch. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this watch.
Similar era, similar feel. There's a right. reason.
Very similar watches. Anyway, last year they released the 1995 Intrepid. It sold out very quickly. And they've just released a second version of this that they've made with Dimepiece. So Dimepiece is a publication that was started by Bryn Wallner, and it's sort of a female focused watch publication. Although they're very careful to like sort of caveat that female focus, you know, sort of female forward focus. Anyway, I don't know a lot about Dimepiece, but it seems like a cool publication. And Bryn Wallner worked with Timex to release a 35 millimeter version of the Intrepid, which really pretty cool. This is a really clever watch. So 35 millimeters somehow manages to capture the entirety of the giant 41 millimeter, 44, whatever it was, Intrepid in a much, much smaller case. Did I say 35? I think it's actually 36.
36, yeah.
Yeah, it's that full cushion case. It's got a great sort of strap that opens at the lugs to sort of invite that like taper, that full taper look. Instead of the Intrepid's blue accent, it's got a purple accent at the 9 o'clock.
But the purple on it is like that royal, like yeah. When you think of like King Richard wearing an indigo cape, it's yeah. that purple.
It's
not
terrific.
It's not deep. Yeah. It's like very like bright and audacious in that purple without being the highlight.
The crown has been rolled down to 4 o'clock, which I think is great. And that purple accent is actually the indigo button. We've mm-hmm. got a great sort of purple pizza slice at 12, 100 meters of water resistance. This watch is great. It is great.
$240. Timex... is they're not flying under the radar in any way at all. They're not getting the recognition for the cool shit that they're doing in the space that we exist in. And I think it's because it's Timex. And Timex is just doing cool shit. We have been Timex fangirls for like 4 years when Timex started to fill the Seiko vacuum as they moved up and kind of down market simultaneously. Timex is filling the void, man. With shit like this. This is what I want. This is what I want big brands to be releasing.
So the legend is that Bryn Wallner actually is responsible for the reissue of the Intrepid, having found this picture of JFK while scrolling through Getty Images. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It seems to me like it is.
I mean, if you look at the photograph.
Yeah.
It's pretty teal indigo button. I think the purple's better than the teal.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Look, that's not a Getty image, man. That's a watch placement
image. Yeah, yeah.
You can see the Timex more clearly than you can the fella's face.
Yeah, this is great. This is really cool.
I'd wear that for work. Next up for me, Yema. Brand we haven't talked about in a while. Don't know why. Because they're just doing baller shit. The Yema Flygraph CPA 10 is a watch that has been developed, I think they say, in collaboration. I think, honestly, it's more of a novelty. It's the word I'm looking for, like an honorific, like more in honor of their partnership, watch. So this is a French brand. They have been since 2020, an official partnership brand with the French military branches to develop and produce watches. So this CPA 10 is a Type A Flieger watch that has been designed and in honor of French Air Force commandos who are parachutists. And so it's an A10 with a really great, like, blue, almost black dial with a French Air Force parachutist badge in the dial, and then a French Air Force parachutist badge at the 6 o'clock, which I could do with one or the other. I don't need both.
It's got too much.
I think if you just go like a black or really, really deep, like midnighty blue on the dial and skip the, I don't know if it's engraved or painted.
Yeah, it's like an engraved dial.
Yeah, it looks engraved on the dial. I could do with one or the other because the parachutist badge is really, really cool in either application, but not both. So Flieger Type A dial, 40 millimeter case, 9.4 thick, 46 lug to lug, grade 2 titanium, 100 meters of water resistance. And because this is designed for parachutists to sustain an impact, a 2 millimeter thick double domed sapphire crystal. And these are 1690 euros on a blue canvas strap. I think it's a little north of where I want to go without a bracelet, but this is a lovely, lovely watch. And Yema does such cool shit.
Yeah. So I think this is the same case as the old Flygraph Fliegers as the, mm-hmm. I believe those had a different, I think those were the old Yema 2000 movements.
These are the CMM 10s.
So this has been upgraded with the CMM 1.0 movement, which is obviously one of my favorite movements. Every time we talk about it, I gush.
That domed sapphire just is baller.
This is a fantastic titanium case. you know, this case really, I don't think, gets enough attention. It is a, like, machined, fully brushed titanium that almost seems like impossibly machined. I really, I cannot say enough about how cool this case is. Like, sort of in an almost, like, crude, not quite crude, but like, or almost an unrefined way that winds up being like incredibly refined because of they've leaned into this.
The Flieger A, the yeah. like A10, that World War II style.
I gotta say, I fucking hate this style though. I love the case. I love the watch. I could, love the movement upgrade. I fucking hate this dial.
I want either or.
I don't even want, I want I, neither.
I'd actually, if I have to choose between the two, I'm fine with the Parachutist Badge at six. I'm not a super fan of the engraved dial, but it's a novelty honorific. What word am I looking for?
I don't know. Put, yeah, put that fucking thing on the back. I fucking,
they have it on the back
dial
too.
I know. Jesus. This dial makes me sick. Yeah, I don't mean like it makes me want to puke. I mean, it makes me sick that this cool watch has this dial that
I mean, maybe they're going to drop this in a,
well, I mean, you can still get the Flieger. You can still get the
in the titanium though. Cause that's what I
yeah, like. Yeah, it comes in titanium. And in this case, they talk about this case being 9.4. It's actually 11.4, I think, when you include the crystal. So notable that most of the case is,
it's a big ass crystal.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge crystal, but it's gonna wear thin. But they do sort of put that 9.4 out there, which I think is,
that crown is so good,
slightly inappropriate. And it's got a great, I mean, it's just a really great case. This is maybe the best Flieger that you can buy today.
Yeah, I don't know if you're wrong.
It's great. Like, in terms of tool watches, yeah.
I want a bracelet option.
That's
where my complaint ends, after the dial.
You know, Andrew, just quickly, Sherpa, I think, really cool brand. They've released two new colorways of the Ultra Dive, what they're calling the Atoll and the Tuxedo, both of them very, very neat. Panerai has released two new submersible Marina Militaire, one of them in carbon, and they've got these great, like, sort of OD dials that are fucking badass.
I want to get on board with Panerai. Yeah. It hasn't spoken to me yet. Maybe someday it will. It's the big crown guard in conjunction with the square case. Like, I have been unable to get on board with Panerai thus far.
Laco released their Altacama 3, which is a really weird and really cool watch that has flexible lugs. And then
did you send me that?
SUF. SUF, the company that is the Finnish company made by, oh gosh, what's the name of the
Finland?
The Finnish company made, and the fella's name is Sarapaneva. That's so the owner of the Sarapaneva watch company, also named Sarapaneva, has his, like, more factory brand SUF. They've released a new colorway of the Helsinki Flieger. It's green with these heat blued hands. This thing is, it sounds like it shouldn't work, and it does.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's meant to celebrate the Winter War, where the Finnish military held off the Soviets.
Both of them.
As the Soviets were invading. So Finland sort of not quite Axis forces, but Axis adjacent during the war, more like sort of looking out for their...
slightly less than neutral.
Themselves, yeah. I mean, so anyway,
it's a big-ass watch. It's a 42-millimeter case.
Super thin, though.
51 lug-to-lug. Like, this is a big old bitch.
It's a big Flieger.
A Soprat A10 movement, yep. 50 meters of water resistance. And it's lovely.
They're lovely, yeah.
The dimensions on her, wild.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Ooh, I have another thing. So I have, for the longest time, been using one of the, like, textile attached to a wooden head and a twisted metal handle with a wooden top mop brush for grilling, like, to mop shit on my grill.
Okay.
And then you, like, soak it and you put it through the dishwasher. You have to hang dry it. And it just gets nasty. But you need, like, a proper brush to, like, brush sauces and mop sauce onto things when you're long cooking. I finally got some silicone basting brushes. They don't hold as much moisture.
Yep.
But they don't soak in any because they're silicone. So I got them from the Amazon. They cost $7 and it was a 5-pack. And I was immediately, like, angry at myself for how long I resisted getting technologically and just objectively upgraded thing out of, like, meaningless resistance, right? Like, yeah. Like, no, this is a mop sauce. I'm going to mop it on with a tiny mop that just holds bacteria and takes 4 trips through the washing machine and it takes a day and a half to dry. No! So I got these silicone brushes. They're $7. I'm going to include it. It's a 5-pack. It takes a little bit longer, but all your mop sauce either goes onto your chunk of meat or back into the bowl. This is it.
I've been using silicone brushes for years. Yeah.
I don't know why I was so resistant. I was, and I finally gave in because I smelled my mop brush.
Oh, I don't want to hear about it.
And I was like, no, you can't. I can't use you. And I was doing that. Like, it was a sniff check. Like, oh, you smell clean. And I shouldn't have been doing that. So I've upgraded to silicone brushes. I'm going to include the 5-pack that I got. This is the way. This is the way.
Yeah. Use a silicone basting brush for sure.
Yeah.
Andrew, I've got another thing that's a little weird for me. This is actually more of like an Andrew style other thing.
Oh.
I had a craving for a bean and cheese taco recently.
Okay. Taco Bar.
I didn't go to Taco Vore.
Because their bean and cheese taco is really good.
It's the best. But I did instead attempt to replicate their beans.
Mm.
And so I understood that their beans were coconut braised. So what does that mean? Well, it turns out coconut braising beans is a soaked bean that is then cooked in coconut milk.
Mm-hmm. I soak them in the coconut milk and then just put it all in.
Yeah, well, I did not. I soaked them in water, so I was able to drain them. And then I braised them, slow cooked them for about an hour and a half in coconut milk. Let the first hour covered and then the last half hour uncovered. I also added...
Put like bacon or ham hock in there?
I did not. No, I kept them vegetarian, but I did add onion. I added a bit of garlic and I spiced them. I spiced them pretty aggressively.
You gotta be super careful when you're spicing beans. They soak up spices weird.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't overspice them. They came out, Andrew, they came out perfectly. I don't know who needs to hear this, but if you are not braising your black beans in coconut milk, and I think this would probably work for just about any sort of substantial bean, you probably wouldn't want to do kidney beans or something that's already pretty like...
Those super starchy already, yeah.
They're just going to fall apart. But a black bean, Oh my gosh, Andrew. They like were creamy, mm-hmm. but also like really nutty.
Because black beans are super flavorful.
And just, oh my gosh, with a little bit of Oaxaca cheese. You do need to, so they come out.
Oaxaca.
You do need to drain them, because if you just put them immediately into the taco, you need to get them a little bit drier before you put them in the taco. But holy spoops.
No, just cook them longer.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to overcook them because I didn't want them to dry out. So
no, you go as low a heat as you can, cook them to evaporate off.
What I wound up doing is I cooked them, I braised them, and then right before I put them in the taco, I fried the beans to cook off the last bit of the moisture, then put them in the tortilla, then put the Oaxaca cheese, then fried the whole thing. Holy shit.
I like to take a scoop, like a third of it. And I put it into the blender.
Oh, yeah.
And then it like comes with like a, you get
kind of
like
creams it up.
You creams it up. Yeah. You cream it up, and then you can evaporate off more moisture.
Well, I will tell you, if you haven't, you should just. So I mixed one can of coconut milk to like six cups of beans, roughly. Dude.
There's like three cans of beans. Three cans.
Probably roughly three cans of beans. And I think you could use canned beans for this if you were in a hurry. I don't think you have to do the beans yourself. You could just get canned black beans and cook them probably for less time, maybe a half hour.
I think the same amount of time, because you want them to break down.
Yeah. Like, wow. If they're in a can, they're probably already partially
reserve
cooked.
Reserve one can to add towards the end. Yeah.
But anyway, so good. So good. Fantastic. If you've never cooked black beans and coconut milk, do it now. It's so good.
I like
good.
To do, when I do like kidney beans and stuff, I do them with coconut milk, because it just pushes fat into them, and in a fat that the way that beans don't have fat, even though they're fatty, it adds like that creamy fat.
Coconut milk, yeah, you get a lot of fat out of that coconut milk, and it's not sweet, but it does add a little bit of sweetness. It's
like buttery fat.
Yeah. Andrew, anything you want to add before we go?
No, I'm out of things, man.
All right. Well, hey, you guys, look, we kept it under an hour.
Look at us go.
Hey, folks, thank you for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. That's watchclicker.com. That's where we post images and articles and reviews. If you want to follow us, you can do that at Watch Clicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker on the Instagrams. That's where we post photos of watches that we're wearing and updates about articles and sometimes about this podcast. If you want to support the Watch Clicker project, and oh boy, we hope you do, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That's how we get all the money to keep this thing going, including hosting for images and for the podcast. And it's a lot of money. You can do that at patreon.com/40and20. Go check it out. Maybe kick us a buck. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.